Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 102, recorded on September 28th, 2010. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here talking about the iPhone, iPod Touch, and anything iOS-related. I'm here with Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Great. Jeff Gamet's also here, and I'm guessing he's doing well, too.
I most certainly am.
Wonderful. From the Mac Observer, of course, macobserver.com. Why don't we just jump right into it, guys? The first thing on our list is, of course, Apple TV related, and it's shipping. Did you guys, I don't remember if, I think Adam, you ordered one, right?
Yes, mine's left Shenzhen and is, I think, in transit to Hong Kong. And hopefully we'll be here. Although, I have to take issue with, well, let me caveat this. Before I take issue, I'm going to say, I'm expecting it to show up tomorrow because I ordered overnight shipping. Now, that said, my tracking says that it's going to be delivered by October 1st. So I'm trying to figure out how, if it leaves China on September 27th and I've paid for overnight shipping, how that ends up being October 1st.
Well,
I guess that's like Apple date. Time continuum stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know that some customers had their expedited shipping refunded because they couldn't do it.
I think that was a rumor, wasn't it?
I'm
not
sure.
Was that confirmed? I never saw one of those emails from any of my listeners. Do you know anybody personally who got one?
No one has contacted me saying that theirs was changed.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would normally get that sort of thing from somebody in my audience going, you know, who would be upset and want me to talk about it.
So. Right, yeah.
So I'm just curious, because that rumor did come out. I just could never get confirmation of it, so I never really reported on it.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that either. I just kind of saw it and
I think
maybe
that was fodder. You know, there's a whole group of people out there that like to like leak stuff to the Mac fan sites just to like trip them up.
Or
so you always have to kind of be leery of that.
Well, when we and find them. We'll rough them up.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, that's what we do. But I mean, there's a lot of people that pick up those stories and you kind of like, I don't know. I'm not hearing about this from anybody else. It's like a one-sourced article. So I'm not saying that it wasn't true or it didn't happen, but I could never get personal confirmation of it. So
gotcha. Well, mine is in Anchorage, Alaska. So I might get mine before yours. And I didn't pay for extra shipping either.
Well, that just doesn't hardly seem fair.
Well, I'll be making a call to Apple's wonderful online store support, and I'm sure they'll take very good care of me.
Hopefully. Is that sarcasm?
No, that's reality.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
They're usually pretty good. And I don't know if it's in this list or if we want to go down a sidetrack already, but have you guys tried the new Express Lane support service? Did I talk about this already?
No, we haven't talked about that. I'm actually not familiar with it.
Dude, so
I've played with it a little, but not to the point where I was going to get charged for anything.
Well, I mean, if you have AppleCare, which I do on a lot of products, including my iPhone 4, right? Your iPhone 4 is still covered. It's still free.
Right.
So it's just what they did is Apple updated their support website, and now they've consolidated some things and brought stuff together. So one of the complaints I always had about like AppleCare and my product registrations is I always register my products through Apple, but depending on where they were registered and when they were registered, sometimes I'd log in and I'd only see like half the stuff I have registered, but then you'd call Apple or be in the Genius Bar. They're like, no, we see all your products. You just can't see them. So they've kind of cleaned all that up in your profile now, although the one caveat I learned was that I have all my stuff registered under my .Mac account because I had .Mac when it was originally out. And you know they converted over to .me. So when I got my iPhone 4, I registered the iPhone 4 under my @me.com account, right, or email address. That one somehow ended off someplace else because it wasn't under apple.mac, which I guess is my Apple, is my official Apple ID in Apple's system, even though I can use either email address. So if anybody's wondered about that, just make sure if you have a, if you were originally a .mac person and you registered everything with Apple under that, use .mac. That's what they want to see, apparently, in the back end.
You know, I have like a random collection of registered devices showing up in my list, and I verified. Well, I know that everything's under the same email address because I actually set it all up with an alternate address. So it's not .mac or .me. And it's interesting. I have my old 12-inch PowerBook showing up three times. I have a couple of my old iPods showing up and a couple other things. But my cinema display isn't there. None of my iPhones are there. No iPod Touch, no iPad, no MacBook Pro.
So this is when you go into Express Lane and you go into the My Products area?
Yeah. Yeah. It's it's just a weird collection of old stuff. None of my current things.
So, okay. What is Express Lane? We've kind of gotten little...
Yeah, we got away from it. So they added this new Express Lane, and it's kind of like... it's just like the centralized area for support. Looking up your product registrations, issuing new cases, support cases, kind of kicking off. It's like the self-service area for doing all of your case stuff. And they have a little wizard to walk you through. Like, you know, you say, I have this desktop. Here's the issue I'm having. So it has that wizard, you know, that sort of troubleshooting wizard.
Sure.
But you can also file a case. You can look up prior cases. You can look up your products and your registrations. You can access your support profile. So something you might try, Jeff, on those registrations is from that same page. I think there's access to the support profile, and you might check. I don't know if the list is different there or not. But
I'll go take a look.
So it's basically you can initiate support.
Initiate support, and what's cool is they have it set up kind of like the concierge service for the Genius Bar at the store. So what you can actually do is you can, if you actually want to log a new case, you say, you know, I need to talk to somebody. And I'll say, great. Would you like us to call you? I forget what all the options are, but I picked the, you know, please call me. And then they give you a list of times that someone is available to call you. And you pick the one when you know you're going to be around. And they just call you back, like on the dot. And so you don't have to wait on the phone. You don't have to do any of that stuff. They just, you know, it's like having an appointment.
You know, when I've done callback stuff with Apple in the past, it has been like that, where you sit there and think, yeah, right, they're not going to call me at 12:15.
Right.
And 12:15, your phone rings.
Yep. It was great.
Huh.
It was really great. And it's nicely designed, like the concierge thing. And it's just, it was a great experience to use.
Yeah, I'm clicking through it right now, and it looks pretty cool. I only have an iPad registered to my Apple ID, so maybe I have to poke around and see if I registered with some other email addresses and stuff like that, probably.
This is how I tried it out. So I didn't have my iPhone there, so I went into my iPhone, I filed a case, and had said, you know, call me about this iPhone issue, and then they helped me out and got it all loaded. So now I have all of my products all under this one area.
Cool.
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely going to poke around in this some more. It looks like they've definitely improved that.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to the Apple TV stuff.
That's a nice new feature of Apple's support area.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Support.apple.com is how you get to that. Let's see. NBC and various other TV studios do not plan on getting involved with the Apple TV rental service, because it's too cheap. 99 cents is too small. According to Jeff Zucker of NBC, we do not think 99 cents is the right price for our content. We thought it would devalue it.
Yeah, but 20 cents an episode is really good.
Based on Hulu ads or?
Based on Netflix streaming. So I think that same day or like the next day, they announced that they were going to open up a bunch of TV stuff to Netflix streaming. And so I went, you know what? I'm watching a lot of TV on Netflix streaming. I'm watching a lot of like Discovery Channel. Like I just finished up, or History Channel too. They got History Channel content on there. So I just finished up the first season of Ice Road Truckers, which I had never seen. and a bunch of people had told me it was really good. So,
oh, it looks like they've added the universe too.
Yeah, they've added tons of stuff.
Cool.
The universe is one of my favorite History Channel programs.
Yeah, they added tons of stuff, and NBC announced that they're going to open up a bunch of stuff from their networks also. So Psych and all that good stuff that's on Bravo and CFE and all those things. I think Battlestar Galactica is finally going to be on there. So I was like excited about that, and I'm like going, well, I've been watching all this TV. I'm probably watching two TV shows a night because without the commercials, you know, it's like 40 minutes an episode or that. So I watch usually two of them a night. So I'm going, okay, two a night times 7 days a week times, you know, or times 30 days. Well, that's 60 shows a month for I pay $8.99 for my Netflix. So I don't know how that math works out, but that's a heck of a lot cheaper than 99 cents a show.
Yeah, Jeff Zucker, come on.
So I'm really confused about this model, and the thing that it was funny, I was talking to Brian Chafin earlier. I'm like, how is this possible? He's like, his theory is somewhat, and I'm starting to kind of believe it, that the TV studios will do anything just to make sure that Apple doesn't get any kind of control. So they're willing to just kind of suffer losses. And I said this on my show. I think the statements made by Zucker and also the Time Warner guy the Warner Brothers guy came out and made a similar statement that I think it's just fodder so that when they're in the negotiations, you know, they've got the media on their side and it puts a little pressure on Apple. But I don't know that there's any reality behind the numbers, because you look at those other services and you go, how can they be making any money really off of Netflix? Unless, I mean, volume might be part of it, but they could get volume on Apple too if they would give Apple the content.
Well, yeah, so. And we don't even know how Netflix is compensating the studios. If it's based on, it must be based on actual viewing habits.
I don't
right?
think it could.
I
be.
Don't think it is. I think it's based on block deals. They just pay a blanket licensing fee to stream content.
Yeah.
Which means
or a rev share. I mean, it might be a rev share model. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But the thing is, they can't be making money off of that. At least not like they could be if they were doing, say, 99-cent show rentals at the iTunes store.
Which is 70 cents in their pocket. I'm assuming Apple would give them the same deal that they kind of do everywhere, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. So studios make 70 cents for someone to be able to watch a show for 48 hours.
Right. And then the funny part of all this is, you know, people are like, well, then the Apple TV is not going to make it because it's all based on rentals. Well, guess what? The Apple TV has Netflix built into it. So
yeah, Netflix
Apple kind of wins
just,
either way. It's like, well, then just buy your Apple TV and get a Netflix subscription and you can get all that TV anyway.
Yeah. And also and
it's cheaper.
It's interesting that they think it devalues the content because, you know, if it's $2 to buy it, I think that they're not really sincere in saying they think it devalues the content. I think that
you're saying that the networks aren't sincere?
I know, shocking, right? But if you look at it, you know, it's $2 to get a standard definition episode of The Office, for example. And I think $2 is pretty much the standard for any TV show. But honestly, TV shows aren't like movies that you watch over and over again if you do that. I think that you watch an episode of a TV show once for the most part. Some TV shows certainly have rewatchability, but I think a lot of it is, you know, it's essentially a rental in the way that you're using it. You're watching it once and then you have it on your computer. And there are a lot of TV episodes that I have sitting around that I just haven't gone back to because I've already watched it, you know?
Right. Right.
So I think that they want to get that extra buck, even though it's essentially the same viewing pattern.
They just don't understand when and why people would do that. And, you know, part of the difference is I think Netflix isn't getting necessarily the TV shows right away. So you have that delayed thing. So the advantage Apple would bring to the table at 99 cents is saying, look, you can get a little extra money up front the day after the show airs for all the people who, you know, don't have multiple TiVos and want to watch multiple shows that are on the same night. I mean, there's an opportunity. There's people there that want that content. And by not making it available, all they do is leave money on the table. And this happens over and over again. Just today, I got an email from Apple because the new Iron Man 2 is now available on the iTunes store. And I'm like, oh, awesome. I'm like, but I bet you it's not available for rental, right?
Yeah.
And of course not. I click through, not available for rental till October 27th.
Yeah, and that's what they've been doing.
I would rent that for $4 tonight.
Sure. Yeah, me too.
Well, and yet you can't.
Yeah, and I can't. And guess what I did do then? Then I popped open Redbox on my iPhone, and the Redbox machine on the corner has it for $1.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to drive down there and get it for $1. I would have just paid the $4 to save myself the trip because I'm lazy. But because they didn't make it available to me, they're going to be out $3, you know, $3.
Yeah, I guarantee you
that Redbox isn't paying them what Apple would pay them for a viewing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, at $1, it's convenient enough that I think they would absolutely make up whatever they're concerned about in volume. You know,
but that's not the issue, as Brian pointed out. I think he's probably right. As stupid as that sounds, they would just rather Apple not have it because then they can offer it up to other people cheaper and kind of keep Apple out of the loop and maintain leverage and kind of make sure that Apple doesn't have control over those negotiations. So when they come back, that Apple will give a little. I think they're trying to, you know, turn the thumb screws on Apple, but I think it's not going to work. I mean, Apple just doesn't play that way, I don't think.
That is just so stupid. I'm not saying the argument is stupid or what Brian is saying is stupid. I think Brian's right. And I think, oh my God, this is so stupid. If I could rent TV shows like that, 99 cents, I'd go rent the show, watch it, and since I tend to enjoy shows that are on channels that I don't have, so I go and rent the show, I watch it. Well, at the end of the season, I'm thinking, that was really cool. So now when the box set comes out, I'm going to go buy it. So now the network gets money off of me twice.
Yeah.
But no.
I'm looking forward to watching Fringe via rental on my Apple TV. Thankfully, Fox is there, right? We got Fox and ABC.
Did Fox actually commit or were they still on the fence?
I think the story with both of those studios is that this is kind of a test run for them. That they're going to see how it goes. Yeah.
That sounds right.
I think it is Fox and ABC.
Cool. Well, we'll have to see how it goes. But it just seems like they're leaving. If I just look at myself as a consumer of this content, I know each month they're leaving, you know, $10-$20 on the table that they probably could have got out of me.
Sure. Yeah. So moving on to other Apple TV items. So there was a posting on LinkedIn from someone who seems to be an intern at Apple. It says it's listed as an Apple TV intern. And more specifically, it says that they were an Apple TV apps engineer. So that was a little bit of evidence that was pointing toward possibly getting applications on the Apple TV. And, you know, that could just be apps that are native to the Apple TV. But yesterday, because the Apple TV started shipping, it seems that Apple needed to post the restore firmware on their servers in case someone needs to restore their firmware. And of course, it is iOS. If there was any more doubt, it's, you know, put that to rest. It's definitely an iOS device. And I've actually poked through it. And last night I even found some images and fun stuff. But yeah, it's definitely iOS. And
It's been jailbroken already.
Has it been jailbroken or have they been able to decrypt it? What are you referring to? I don't think they've...
Somebody had sent me a link and told me it's already been jailbroken.
I don't think that's possible because I don't think they're really around yet.
I think they figured out, like with iOS 4.1, they figured out how to jailbreak it, so it's possible, but no one's actually put together all the pieces to make usable jailbreak.
I think part of a working jailbreak at this point requires that you have the ability to work with the firmware as well. But what I did see is that they found the decrypt key for the firmware. So when you download firmware from Apple for an iOS device, it's essentially a zip file with several disk images inside of it, and those disk images are encrypted. But you can decrypt it and then mount it and check out all the stuff. And that's what they found.
Cool. So, all right, so we know it's really iOS. That's been put to rest.
Yep. And Erica Sadoun reports at TYW that the stuff, the item in, so it's running iOS, but the...
Can I make a prediction about that, by the way?
Sure.
I predict Pandora is the next update.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, I think, yeah, because Apple likes Pandora so much. But yeah, so
if I'm right, I get credit.
Okay, you get credit for that one. But the application that runs on iOS, which shows you the Apple TV interface, it's called, I can't remember, Low Tide, I believe. And what Erica was reporting on is that the Low Tide application also has stuff in there mentioning that it can run as an iPad background service, as if, if that was on the iPad, which it might in a future update, it would be, that interface would also be available on the iPad, leading us to believe that we may be able to start watching something on our Apple TV, and instead of, the way of sending stuff to an Apple TV with an iPhone or iPad or something like that, we'd be able to stream stuff from an Apple TV to an iPad or iPhone. So if you're sitting there watching something and you think, oh, I need to, run into the kitchen and wash the dishes or something like that, you can say, beam it to my iPad and I'll start watching it on the iPad instead.
Could it also be for something like flipping the tables with the iPad? So that if I have something playing on my iPad and I say, okay, stream this to my Apple TV,
you'd get
it'd be kind of cool if the Apple TV interface then came up on my iPad and let me kind of browse around and find other stuff and access other areas and then switch it back to the Apple TV. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So kind of remotely controlling what's on the Apple TV via the AirPlay thing?
But sort of like, how some TVs you can have the guide, I think TiVo does this, right? Or the newer TiVos, I don't know, where you can have the program running, but then you can still access the menu system.
Oh, sure.
Kind of browse around and not interrupt your show. So if I could start a show playing on my iPad, right, send it to my Apple TV, well, it's going to come up full screen on my television. I've lost my Apple TV interface. If that Apple TV interface could come up on my iPad now, because I've just got that screen sitting in front of me, and I could kind of browse around and look at other stuff. So I might have a movie trailer playing, but now I'm browsing around and looking for the next movie trailer I want to queue up on the Apple TV.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. They just released the second beta of iOS 4.2 for iPad and iPhone and iPod Touch. So we might yet, after this podcast is finished recording, we may get some more details on that. We may actually see get some more information on how that's going to work, if there is going to be some kind of Apple TV, a higher Apple TV interaction on the iPad.
That would actually be cool if there was some additional type of interactivity. And based on what we're seeing with the replacement software that's out there, the stuff that Erica has uncovered, I'm starting to think that the Apple TV is essentially an iPad in a little box without a display on it.
Yeah, for your TV.
Yeah.
It seems like that. And they've also released iTunes 10.1 beta. This is also to developers. But I'm wondering, I've been thinking, we can stream audio to the Apple TV, right, with iTunes as it is right now. Mm-hmm. But with AirPlay, do you think we're going to be able to stream video from iTunes to our Apple TV? I mean, it's kind of backwards because you would be linking up to your iTunes library anyway, but would that be an option, do you think? Do you think this update might add the ability to maybe play stuff from QuickTime through the Apple TV?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because you already can in a way, right? Because you access your iTunes library from the Apple TV interface and then pull it across.
Right.
Rather than push it. But I wouldn't see why not. I think it will come in a QuickTime update probably, because I still maintain, I think we talked about this last time, that this functionality is probably in the core QuickTime layer of OS X.
Right,
I'm guessing.
Well, it's certainly in the QuickTime layer of the iOS, so.
Right, which is based on OS X. So I would imagine one, you know, it'll find its way back to the desktop version. And why not? Because if you had your MacBook sitting in front of the TV just like an iPad, you should be able to shoot your video to the app, to the Apple TV.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited for the new Apple TV because I just, lots, like I said before, lots of people come by my house and it's always, hey, you know, I want to plug in my iPod. I want to play some music. And I'm curious to see how seamless and easy that's going to be to, you know, for some person who hasn't come over and joined my network before, how easy it will be for them to start playing music on the Apple TV.
Yeah, I have a feeling if past stuff is any indication, it's not going to be as easy as you want, but still be relatively easy.
Probably easy enough to accommodate security measures so people won't just start playing music without you knowing.
Yeah, there's still the whole, the one complaint, and I think it's a valid complaint that I've heard people say, is that, you know, you have to, because it's all streaming all the time, you have to have your machines on, and I'm sure there's going to be those sleep-wake issues that always come about when you're dealing with that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So there's going to be some bumps in the road and some hiccups, I think, that they're going to have to work through, and I'll predict right now that a lot of people are going to report, oh, my Mac's asleep and I can't access my content, or I was watching it and my Mac fell asleep and then suddenly everything stopped. That sort of stuff might go on.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're right, but I have a feeling that Apple's going to change the way the whole system communicates so that you can send a wake command back to your computer.
Well, sure. Most Macs, most current Macs have that ability, and I think it's it might even be included as a part of Snow Leopard, right?
Yeah, but it's always just been wonky. I mean, anybody who's dealt with this stuff, if you've tried to set up like a centralized media server and use a Mac as a hub and stuff like that, if you've really played around with it, it gets dicey. Like, as a matter of fact, right now, for some odd reason, I got an email from a listener. I have my Mac Mini set up as kind of a home theater system, and it's on right now, and I have it set to never go to sleep, but it drops off of my shared network, so I can't connect to it. But if I go wake it up, it'll show back up. I have my wife's iMac that's set up the same way, and hers maintains a connection. And he had a Mac Mini too, so it seems to be something related to the Mac Mini and the latest software update, the 10.6.4. It happened after the latest security update. So
I don't remember if you said are your computers on Wi-Fi or wired into the network.
The computers are, those two are on Wi-Fi, and this one is the one that I would try to access it from is actually wired into the base station. So,
okay. So I'm asking because I'm curious if Wi-Fi might be related to the problem in some way.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But my wife's also on Wi-Fi, so it seems to be only the Mac Minis for some reason. So it's really odd. I haven't done enough research. But the point is that there's always been these really weird sleep-wake networking things that go on. So I think that's going to be one of the challenges that the Apple TV is going to face.
Yeah, possibly.
It's too many variables. I mean, you've got third-party routers, you've got people going over Wi-Fi, that's the bane of anything that's wireless and streaming now is just the complexity of that stuff.
Right. Did you guys see that new mock-up from patently Apple of the dual docked iPad, the iPad with two dock connectors, one on the bottom as it is now, but one on the side as well?
I've seen some of the photos, and I like the idea of that. Of course, you realize if Apple does that, it means that that
Steve has lost control.
Yeah, well, all their docks have to change.
Why do you say that? Because the curvature is different on the side than it is on the bottom?
I might be wrong on that, but what I foresee is that Apple would have to change the docks to accommodate the different positions. Maybe I'm wrong, though. You know, I don't see Apple putting a dock on the side. I think that this is just one of those patent moves where they're stopping other people from doing the same thing. Because Apple is not into the whole, let's clutter up the outside of the case with all these ports and openings and slots, and adding a second dock port on the side sure would clutter things up. And that dock connector takes a lot more space on the inside than a lot of people realize. And I don't know if Apple's willing to give up that space inside their devices.
Right. Well, I thought it was pretty interesting that it was uncovered so recently, because I think Nevin Morgan of Panic Software was talking about on Twitter the other day how he would love to have a dual dock on his iPad, because sometimes you want to have it in the landscape mode when you dock it. And I think that'd be cool too. But I at the same time feel Apple would never do that.
Yeah. All Apple did for me is just lost a dock sale. So I have a stand that I can rotate the iPad in, and I just use the cable.
And that seems a lot more reasonable. Or to use Bluetooth, depending on what you're doing.
Right, right.
Which would actually be a lot cleaner.
Yeah, and along those same lines, there's also been a rumor from Goldman Sachs analysts stating that the second iPad will include a mini USB port. And will
fake,
also
fake,
be
fake.
I tried to get the other part in before you called fake, but they also said that it would be lighter and thinner. I'm not sure if they would make it thinner, but I like the idea of lighter.
Well, yeah, because it's only going to be 7 inches, right?
Well, they're talking about the 9.7-inch iPad,
smaller. No, I'm joking. I'm playing on the fact that I think the 7-inch rumors are a bunch of BS too.
Yeah. I still don't understand why you'd want a 7-inch iPad, but yeah, they say...
Because it can fit in your pocket. Didn't you see the Galaxy Tab ads?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Slide it into your back pocket and then promptly sit on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with your big-ass gangsta pants and pockets. Yeah. Can you picture me putting on a pair of pants like that?
Yes. No, wait. Okay, putting on a pair of pants or taking them off for comfort?
Well, okay, now, I know you can picture me taking them off. But
no.
Okay, Michael can picture me taking
Unfortunately,
them off.
Yes, I can picture that. Continue.
But can either of you picture me wearing a pair of pants like that out in public? And granted, I understand a lot of our listeners probably can't picture me wearing pants at all. But, I mean, really, who is really in the mainstream going to be carrying that and be wearing the type of pants that are going to have pockets that big?
Yeah. Well, what I want to know is, can someone explain the appeal of that form factor, that size, that 7-inch size? Because that seems to be what every other tablet manufacturer is going for.
Right, yeah. Yeah, if you look at...
Why that size? What is significant about that size? Is it just displays are easy to get at that and much cheaper to get at that price?
Or? Well, I'm sure from a manufacturing standpoint, that has a lot to do with it. But I think the whole drive for a 7-inch display in devices isn't so much that this is something consumers have been clamoring for, but that the product developers and certain groups within the whole tech media world have not colluded, but agreed that this would be a cool thing. And not like they even got together and said, wouldn't it be cool? It's just something that's kind of evolved. Just like with the whole netbook thing, when you really get down to it, what is good about a netbook as a real quality production machine? And I will go so far as to say nothing, because everything in it is a compromise. And I look forward to your emails, everyone, telling me that I'm wrong. But I think I'm right in this. And I think that the whole 7-inch tablet is the same kind of thing. You know, well, if like with laptops, well, if you have a 15-inch screen, a 9.8 or a 10-inch screen will be even better because it's smaller and it's going to be more compact. And I think we're seeing the same thing with this slate-style tablet market that Apple has created. You know, oh, 9.7 inches, that's great. Well, 7 would be better because it's smaller.
You know what? I have to wonder now. I don't know why I didn't think of this before, but I think most of the competing products are using AMOLED screens. And I bet you it's more just a restriction of that's like the most cost-effective AMOLED screen that they can get their hands on. And anything larger is probably too costly. And they want to one-up Apple on the screen brightness and stuff like that, which I know that's even still up to debate in comparison to the stuff, you know, the technology that Apple's using, the IPS.
Yeah. Have you actually seen an AMOLED screen outdoors? And I'm asking...
No, I haven't.
Because I have, and I'm curious if you have and what you would think.
I have not.
All right, so then my experience with AMOLED screens outdoors, I was actually really disappointed. And now, granted, I had like a 15-minute window where I could do this. And it was a bright day, no clouds in the sky in Colorado. So there's less UV blockage and all that, I understand. But I really couldn't read the screen. I had better luck with my iPhone 3G screen than I had with the AMOLED screens that I was looking at.
Right.
Well, to be fair, the iPad kind of sucks in the light, too.
Yeah.
Totally sucks in the light.
Yeah.
Which is right. Why I enjoy it.
However, saying that AMOLED is better, I think is wrong.
Yeah. I don't have an opinion on it because I haven't really worked or played with an AMOLED screen. But, you know, that's a lot of people like to have that debate. What I'm more curious about, though, is this, you know, I really am. And if people want to give me some feedback, what their thoughts are on that screen size, that 7-inch screen size, I think it's being dictated by the technology they can get their hands on. And I think the problem is, and where the iPad's still going to continue to have an advantage, is the size of the iPad seems to be about perfect because it fits like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper for like reading in PDF documents and things like that. It's the right size. And if I want something more portable, I have my iPhone or my cell phone. And that 7-inch just doesn't seem big enough to do the things that you want to do on a tablet, and it doesn't seem small enough to be portable like your cell phone. So I just don't get that size. I don't get the draw of that size, and just in terms of usability.
Yeah, I'm not getting it either. But okay, now here's how I can justify it, and keep in mind that I have to stretch for some of this. So if you look at the way a lot of people consider technology when they go to buy it in the beginning, if they don't understand a lot of what they're using or they're focused more on money, they're okay making a lot of compromises and they're okay with something that's just good enough. And you can see that if you go, say, to Best Buy. Look at a lot of the PCs that are available in the store. Well, they'll probably get the job done. They're just good enough. But they're nothing special. There's nothing that sets them apart and makes them a really good, powerful, useful creativity or business tool. It's just cheap and it's good enough to get by. And I think that's the market and the mentality that will be involved in pushing a lot of the 7-inch tablet type devices. Well, it's just good enough.
Yeah. Think Apple will license a Game Center for the Playbook?
Okay, what's up with the Playbook name? This is
it's terrible.
Targeted at the enterprise market, and they're calling it Playbook. Now, outside the United States, I don't know if the term Playbook in the sports world has the same meaning that it does here. So in the United States, I can see it as a very weak stretch. Meaning, here's the book that we have, all of our strategies and plans for beating the other team. Go us. But it doesn't even feel like that's what the name really is. It's more like, here's our toy. At least that's how it comes across to me.
I didn't think that when I saw the name. For whatever
that's
worth.
It does have two nice cameras in it.
It does. It has a 3-megapixel front camera and a 5-megapixel rear camera.
And that's very nice. And there you go. It's very nice. You know, I know I am bagging a lot on Playbook right now, But that's because RIM hasn't actually shown us anything yet. They've made a video, and I think I tweeted a couple days ago about, and the Knowledge Navigator video is still really cool, but we don't have that.
Yeah, they say that it will be out early next year. They say we will have a dual-core 1 gigahertz Cortex A9 processor, 1 gig of RAM, and a 1024x600 display.
Yeah, so the specs are nice.
They are, yeah.
But giving me specs on a product that hasn't been put together and isn't shipping and showing me a video that's not the same thing showing me...
Uh-oh. Are we losing you, Jeff?
...the product on a stage and say, and this is what it is, and they demo, if nothing else, a prototype for us. So... I'm leery of how well Playbook is actually going to perform, simply because we haven't seen anything that shows us that it can really do what they're talking about.
Right.
When they show me what it can really do, and if it lives up to what they talked about in the video, I think that would be great, because that would be really good competition in the marketplace, and it means everyone's going to have to stay on top game to make sure that their tablets, including Apple's, are competing, and in the end, as consumers, we will all win because we'll have better products. And so that's what I hope we get with the Playbook. But until I see it, I'm really skeptical about how good Playbook's going to be. I'm like Mr. Negative Pants tonight.
Are you wearing your negative pants, Jeff?
I am.
Well, that explains it.
Yeah. Sorry, I put the wrong pants on for the show.
It's okay.
My bad.
All right. Last thing I want to talk about before we get to our feedback. We had a call out to the listeners to get some weather applications, but the official Google Voice application has been approved by Apple. Finally.
The official one?
The official one. According to TechCrunch, they say that Google's application, the Google Voice app, has actually been approved, but Google has decided to hold on releasing the application so that they can update it to the current operating system's specs, because, you know, it was submitted in 2009.
Well, they never took it off, right? It was always just kind of sitting in limbo.
Right.
Okay. Sorry, Jeff.
You know, okay. So, see, I'm still wearing my negative pants. You know, TechCrunch saying that the Google Voice app has been approved, and Google not saying this themselves, I have a big old bucket of meh sitting right here. And until I see the Google app or the Google Voice app actually out, to me it's not approved. So when Google says it, then I'll think that's really cool. And I have a feeling that at some point soon, Google will say that. But hearing it from TechCrunch right now, whatever.
Fair enough.
I'm really in a good mood, even though it doesn't sound like it.
All right. So moving right along. Actually, we have one call to get to before we talk about weather applications, and that's from Nate, and I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, but I will let that roll.
Is this going to involve me having to apologize for something?
No.
Oh, cool. Then let's play it.
All right.
Hey, guys. This is Nate. I'm recording from Slovenia. I have a little comment about the new button, the mute button or the orientation lock button that is going to change in iOS 4 for the iPad. And like you guys said, it changes functionality, but it makes consistency across the iOS devices. And I think Jeff and Michael mentioned that they both use the lock switch a lot. And in my case, I almost never use it. And actually, I would prefer to have a mute button, because every time I want to just lower my iPad's volume, it goes right down, and then I have to go up. And for me, the change that is going to happen will be okay. So my guess is that whatever the situation is, perhaps 50% of the people will be satisfied and another 50 won't be. So, because if this is really a 50-50 ratio, then it really doesn't matter what it is. But if it fixes the consistency across all devices, then that's a plus. So that's my little comment about that. So thank you for the show. I wait for it every week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Nate. After listening to that, I still think that I would prefer the lock switch to lock the screen orientation and not kill the audio. But the point that he brought up regarding the, when you want to turn the volume down a little bit, that's the most irritating thing all the time. Every time I just don't want to use that button because I know it's just going to kill my audio completely. So I don't even use it. So I think it will return, better usability to the volume rocker, and I will probably get used to the double click and swipe and then tap.
He's exactly right. I mean, and plus the consistency thing, which I think we mentioned, is really key. I think it's important that all the iOS devices that have those switches, which are common across all of them, the switches behave as you would expect as you move from device to device. From device to device, so that's really important. And again, like you said, we'll get over it. We'll get used to the new way. I think the dilemma is that they gave us one feature that's really awesome, and now they're taking it away.
Yeah, so I want another switch.
Stings a little bit.
Not like Apple's ever done that before.
Right.
You know, I totally agree that consistency is important, and it's one of my biggest gripe, so it's actually my single largest gripe about Android OS. There's no consistency at all, and it makes it so difficult to use the devices, I think.
Yeah.
The thing with the rotation lock on the iPad is a device that's designed to be used in a different fashion from the iPhone and the iPod Touch. So I can see setting as a default for consistency the switch as a mute. But because this device is designed to be used in a different fashion, I think it should also have the option so that we can choose to switch and make that little slider the lock instead of the mute. And I think so here's an example for you. If you are, say, sitting on the couch or leaning back on the couch so that you have to lift your iPad up to see it or use it, the screen starts flipping and rotating a lot. If you have a switch that you can flip real quickly while you're doing whatever it is you're doing, great. Otherwise, you have to do what Michael described. You have to double tap the home button, you have to swipe to the left, then you have to tap the rotation lock button. And if you are like at least some of the people that I know and like me, you need to lock it for a couple minutes and then switch it back again.
Right.
That just became a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, and with my iPhone, having it in that little somewhat hidden area is totally fine because I leave my iPhone on screen lock all the time, and I hardly ever unlock it because I just don't want it flipping around.
Sure.
But I definitely enjoy flipping around my iPad.
Yeah, and my iPhone, I leave it unlocked from screen rotation because it's small enough that if I need to rotate it or flip it back from whatever rotation it's in, it's basically just a flick of my wrist. Whereas with the iPad, it's not a flick of the wrist.
Right.
So I totally get the whole thing about consistency across products, and it's something that I have stood on my soapbox and bitched about over and over. So I have to concede that point, that consistency is important. So
yeah.
it should be set as the default to mute. But I really think on the iPad, we should also have the option to change that to the orientation lock.
And I feel like we won't get that, though, even though I agree with on that point.
But we definitely won't get that because that doesn't fit with the way Apple develops and designs their products. They're not going to give us that option. It's like the argument that pro flash people present, which is, well, Apple should give us the choice. Just put a preference in the system so we can turn flash on or off if we want. No, that's not how it works. That's not how Apple plays the game. It adds complexity that Apple doesn't want to introduce into the system. It's not going to happen. And so it's not going to happen here either. So I'm doing a sad face. Mm-hmm. But I'm still happy.
All right. So moving on. Last week, we asked you guys, the listeners, to send in your suggestions as to some good weather applications for the iPad and for the iPhone. And I got a lot of feedback from you guys. The first item, Steve voted for Weather Channel's application, which, if you remember last week, I totally hate. I mean, it's great that it gives me the radar map. The interface for that's terrible. And it seems to have to reload. It doesn't cache the images of the radar at all, so it reloads the image every time it goes back instead of, you know, slowly loading the frames and then playing smoothly. It just kind of is always loading. And then it has these irritating ads, and the interface is really sucky. But it does give you the Weather Channel's video clips, so that's cool. But...
Michael's wearing my pants, isn't he?
It's Michael's review. It's sucky.
I don't like it. The next application that one of you guys sent in, Robert recommends Radar Scope, which I have not checked out, but that is his recommendation. He says that it provides it's a very basic functionality weather application, but it gives you lots of really cool radar images and the ability to search through that and get it to play and all that good stuff. Andreas from the UK said Weather Pro is the application that he recommends, and I will bring that up as I'm talking. Did you guys find any good applications, weather applications, since our discussion on that?
No, I didn't.
I still just like the one that I use, the AccuWeather.
Oh, right. I
started playing with that since you recommended it. And that's kind of a fun interface. It's non-traditional, but it's easy to figure out, and it's pretty.
It's pretty. Like I said, it's not the most... There's not a lot of bells and whistles in it. It's pretty basic, but that meets my needs. I want to know the temperature, a few extra things, and it looks nice. So, you know, it doesn't have a really, I think I mentioned this, doesn't have a really great, what I would consider satellite kind of video view. They do, it's interesting, they do their own like little video clips.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not into the video stuff either, so.
Yeah, I'm looking through Weather Pro. It's $5 for the iPad. They have a separate iPhone application. This one looks pretty good, too. So maybe check that one out. And we actually had someone call in regarding a weather app recommendation. And before I play that, I would like to remind everybody that you can send in your audio comments to, you know, for any topic in the show, but, you know, especially when we ask for some feedback from you guys, you can email that in with the feedback at wehavecommunicators.com email address. You can send us an audio file from your voice memos app, but you can also call using the phone number 202-642-6667. And this caller didn't leave a name, but here's his recommendation.
Weather app recommendation, MyCast. I don't care what the reviewers say about it, but it is the best radar that I have seen, most accurate, most up-to-date, most readable, and that's the one I'd go with, MyCast.
And he, if you couldn't make out what he said, it's my Cast, my hyphen cast from Digital Cyclone. And I have not had a chance to play with this one either. This is an iPhone-only app, which is fine. And what he, the thing that struck me most about this is what he pointed out is that it's very readable, which I like. You know, some apps are, some weather apps just have so much crap in them that it's tough to figure out what you want to do with it. And it looks like it's a very clear interface, and it has radar maps and forecast and current conditions, and it looks really cool. So $3.99 in the App Store. It's MyCast. That is his recommendation. Carl recommends Weather Underground, the website actually. It's i.wund.com, i.wund.com. They have an iPhone version of the Weather Underground website, which I actually had not heard of before I checked that out. But it's very cool. It's a web app, and you can save it to your iPhone home screen and pull that up. And they actually have moving weather radar maps within a web app. So that's cool. And it's free.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Have either of you used the other one that's really pretty but super basic? And I've just seen screenshots of it, but it looks really beautiful. Is Weather HD?
No, I don't think so. I'm pulling it up.
I've seen screenshots, but I haven't used it either. And you're right. It looks very pretty.
And those are actually videos, I think. It's like a full-screen video of the weather conditions. It's just kind of like a canned video. So if it's snowy, it's snowy mountains.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw this. So it gives you basically, you can pull up a forecast. It's kind of a basic forecast, basic current conditions, and
It's only a buck, and it's really just beautiful. It's kind of, I call it the Zen. It's like the Zen weather app. It's the one that you just want to pull up and leave it on your desktop on the side and just go, pretty pictures.
Yeah, exactly. And Mark recommends Weatherbug Elite.
Weatherbug is pretty good.
You know, I used to use Windows computers, so the name Weatherbug seemed like spyware to me because it always just, whenever you'd get a virus, you'd somehow end up getting Weatherbug on your...
The one thing about Weatherbug is that I think it's kind of based on a network of little weather stations, and a lot of them are set up at elementary and middle and high schools.
Yeah, and you
can kind of pick between the ones that are around near you. And sometimes I think their equipment's not always accurate. So sometimes you might pull one up and it's like, that does not seem right. And you have to go check another one.
I haven't experienced that, but I've...
I've experienced that.
Oh, okay. Like, hey, there's a hurricane in Colorado.
Well, not like that, but you'll pull one up and it's like 10 degrees warmer than every other one in the area, and you're like, okay, that's just anomalous. It doesn't aggregate that stuff, so you actually get the data from each little site.
Oh, I see.
So that's the only thing.
You know, Weatherbug is actually the app that I switched to once I decided to stop using the Weather Channels app.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I enjoy it. And it lets you pull up current conditions. It has a neat little transition. You can see on the side, on the right-hand side, you get the various little panels of items such as video and alerts and hourly forecast and current conditions. And on the left, you get a nice big radar map, which you can pull up various items. You can get IR satellite, visible satellite, temperature, pressure, humidity, and all those different things. I usually leave it on radar, and the playback on that is usually pretty good. It uses big maps, but that's okay. And it also has a bunch of cameras you can check out. So I guess from the various weather stations around my area, so I can check out, you know, NIU and Monroe and various schools around the place and just see a little camera of, right now it's kind of dark on the cameras, but yeah, it's kind of neat to pull up a weather camera. You also get the forecast, and it's pretty nice, and it's free.
Hey, you know, Bing is actually turning out to be a pretty nice service, and I think it's the thing that's probably hammering the nails in Yahoo's coffin.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, well, Yahoo, depending on what part of the country you're in, has been doing a pretty good job of nailing itself into its own coffin for a while now.
Well, that's what I mean. Bing is just here to finish the job.
Yep.
Yeah, and just handing over the keys to the kingdom to Microsoft, that was a really smart move, not.
anyway, yep. I've seen some pretty nice services and stuff coming out of Bing, so I got to give them credit when they do a nice job.
Yeah. All right. So with that, I'll wrap up by saying the recommendations were the Weather Channel app, which I don't like, Radarscope, Weather Pro, MyCast, the Weather Underground website, which you can just go to weatherunderground.com or i.wund.com to go directly to it, and WeatherBug Elite were the recommendations. So thanks everybody for sending those recommendations in. We really appreciate it. And once again, the phone number, if you have anything to send in, is 202-642-6667, and the email address is feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And Jeff, do you have an iDevice pick for us this week?
I do. And hopefully it's not one you guys were planning on discussing.
I hope so, too.
I doubt it.
Okay. So, all right. So my pick this week is Remote 2.
Okay. See, that was my pick.
Oh, sorry, man.
No, keep going. I'll just add on to it.
Okay. So Remote 2, it came out earlier today, and it's Apple's free app for controlling iTunes and your Apple TV from your iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. And previously, it didn't have an iPad interface, but now it does. And it also has AirPlay control, so you can control the volume of speakers, AirPlay-compatible speakers, independently, so you can set one set to be loud, another be really quiet. And Michael, I will intentionally leave out some stuff so that there's okay. things for you to talk about, too. And I really like it on the iPad because you have, like, if you're going to do YouTube searches, you have a full-size keyboard to work with as opposed to just the little thumb keyboard that you get on an iPhone. And I'm not going to talk about much more, so there's more things for you. But
can you talk about the home sharing setting? Because I didn't really understand that one.
Oh, that's awesome.
I haven't had a chance to set up home sharing yet, but from what I understand, it works like home sharing does in iTunes. Mm-hmm. So it becomes another home shared device, so people can stream content from your iPhone, your iPad, whatever.
Seriously?
It goes that way? Wait a minute.
I think you're crazy.
Maybe I am, but like I said, I haven't played with that feature yet, but I was talking with some other people today, and that's what they were talking about. And I went, really? Maybe I should go look at this.
I know when I turned it on and I have home sharing on my MacBook Pro, what was nice about it was I didn't have to do that whole set it up as a remote for my MacBook Pro.
Right. I think that's what that does.
Yeah. Okay.
More reasonable.
It says remote will automatically find the iTunes libraries and Apple TVs that have home sharing turned on using the account, whatever.
Oh, okay. So it takes out the extra steps. That seems more reasonable.
Which actually just happened because I didn't have my MacBook Pro added and I went into the app and ta-da, it's there.
Well, that's
but
cool.
You still have to authenticate, you know, through your
Right. You do have to give it
account,
your home sharing
your
account.
iTunes account. Yep. So people who are concerned about the security thing, you have to, you know, register. It's just you don't have to run back to iTunes and plug in that 4-digit code.
Oh, okay. Okay. So another wonderful feature of the remote application is something that kind of bugged me with the previous version. You could not access libraries that you might play music from. So other libraries that you would connect to via the sharing feature in iTunes, you wouldn't have access to those libraries when you're playing from your library. So with the new remote application, if you go to More, there's a shared button. So you tap on shared and it gives you a list of shared libraries that your iTunes library has access to. And then you can choose music from there and play it on your computer, which is very cool. Other than that, I have to say that whoever is on the remote app team, they just did a phenomenal job, especially with the iPad version of this application, because it just blew me away with how lovely it is.
It's a very nice interface.
Yeah, the screen that lets you choose libraries. It has features nice big icons, so if you want to choose your Apple TV, or your it shows up as an Apple TV icon, and the iTunes libraries show up as iTunes icons. And the thing that I like most about it is how wonderfully responsive the interface is. So when you look at music on a remote library using the remote app on your iPad, you get the same album cover view that you get on your iPad with the iPod app, but it's not all slow and sucky like it is on the iPod app on your iPad. I noticed, you know, rotating the interface is pretty instant and doesn't lag or just it just works so well, and you tap something and it pops right up and you can start playing it right away, and it's just really nice.
Yeah, it's a very nice interface. I like that you have full access to Genius Mixes.
Oh yeah, that too.
Which I actually use the Genius Mixes a lot.
Oh, I didn't. I hardly ever use it.
Yeah, well, see, I had previously made smart playlists that did something very similar to what Genius Mixes does, where it's grouping songs based on genre or style. So having Genius Mix to do that for me, well, that's kind of cool. And it's just great being able to access that stuff.
Yeah. The Now Playing screen looks very similar to the standard iPod Now Playing screen for the iPad. Yeah, if you have an iPad, grab this app right away. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think my iPad has become my, as of today, my default device for controlling Apple TV.
Yes, of course. And of course, the gesture stuff that you could do on your iPhone or iPod Touch with the Apple TV, so controlling the interface with your thumb, that is also included in the iPad version. So I'm not seeing the shared feature, though, in the iPad app. I wonder if that's because there are no shared libraries. I'm just not seeing it.
It might require iOS 4.
Really? I don't see why it would. Oh, well. But yeah, so remote app, go get it. It's new and improved, faster, better, awesomer. It's free. And that is both Jeff's and my pick.
Wow. So you know it has to be good.
Yeah. Or you can come after us.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they don't know where we live.
How fast can you run, Michael?
I can run... Okay. I can do... I don't know.
I can run okay, but if someone's chasing me, I bet I could run pretty fast.
Yeah, I can run faster when someone's chasing me, and probably even faster if a bear is chasing me.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, what is your pick?
My pick is a little app, and I thought I had picked this before, but I don't think so. Tell me if I have. RunPee.
I don't think so.
Do you guys know about RunPee?
How do you spell that?
RunPee.
Okay. Space? It's run space P?
No, all one word. Run P from Rock Software.
Is this a toilet app?
Yes, in a way, no, but a really cool one.
Okay.
It has some little quirks. The interface isn't perfect. And, well, I guess I should tell you what it does first.
Yes.
So it's an app. If you go to the movies... Right, you're in the movies.
Oh yeah,
giant soda, and you go halfway through, and you're like, "Oh, I really have to go," but you don't want to miss any good parts of the movie. What it does is it summarizes for any movie that you go to when the good times to go to the bathroom are, and how much time you will have to go to the bathroom, and it even includes a little built-in timer, so you can put that down, hit start, and you can keep track of how long you've been away. And so, like, I just pulled it up, and they just added, you know, they have the new Wall Street movie. And so it says at 42 minutes in, and it gives you a cue. It tells you when to go. So it says just after you see Jim Cramer from Mad Money talking about Churchill Schwartz, you have 4 minutes to go to the bathroom. And then you can tap it and get a summary of what you missed.
Oh.
I love that feature.
Oh,
I'd forgotten that's what this app was called.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds like such a useful application.
It is. It's a, and so it lists it out for all the different movies. Now, you can list them by release date or by alphabetically. They also have trailers built in. There's some Twitter integration, although no, I don't know why you'd want to tweet that you're
going
running
to the
bathroom in the middle of a movie. But.
I'm peeing halfway through Spider-Man.
So those are the kind of some of the weird things. It's a really basic interface. It doesn't have searching for movies, which I was a little disappointed with. But just the functionality of it alone, you know, the usefulness of it alone. If you go to the movies, and I don't even go to the movies that much anymore, but it's just a handy thing to have because I'm the guy who gets the giant soda at the beginning and drinks the whole thing before the movie starts, right?
Right, yeah.
And then inevitably I have to go halfway through. So it's perfect for that. And I think it's, I want to say it's free, but I'm not.
No, it's a dollar. Well,
dollar,
99 cents.
99 cents. So it was worth 99 cents for me, obviously.
Oh, yeah. And if you consider how much it costs for, say, two people to go to a movie, get popcorn and drinks, 99 cents probably pays for itself at the first movie.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. No, this is cool. I already grabbed it. I bought it as you guys were talking about it because it's just such a neat idea. Inception.
And I don't know where they get their data. I don't know if they're just like
they actually have people that go out and watch the movies. So people are assigned to go see the movies. They have to take notes, and then after the movie's over, they compile the information, and then it goes out to the app.
So I guess that would mean if I want to use this when I go to see The Social Network on opening night, it probably won't work.
It won't work on opening night.
Dang.
But it will work very shortly after that.
So if you haven't seen Inception already, you have a little list of when you
can
pee.
And you know when to pee.
Yep. Or Resident Evil something something Afterlife.
Resident Evil 59 or whatever they're up to.
I can't get enough of Resident Evil. There's something wrong with me.
Yeah, clearly. Mm-hmm. But we love you anyhow.
Yep, thank you. So Run Pee is 99 cents. And it seems like it's worth it because that's a cool idea. I really like it. Run Pee by Rock Software.
Yeah. RunPee.com is the website.
Oh, they have a website too? Cool.
Yep.
Can you submit your Run Pee
I haven't, you know,
stuff?
I don't know. I just grabbed the app and I just use it.
Let's see here. RunPee.com. Flash website. That's odd.
So they're writing an iPhone app? And they have a Flash website?
The entire website's Flash.
Oh, come on, people. All right, yeah. I'm not going to get on my soapbox because everyone knows what I'm going to say anyhow.
Yeah. Doesn't look like there's a way to submit
your, marketing fail.
Your P stuff. m.runp.com? Oh, yeah. He has a mobile version of the website, so m.runp.com.
Shouldn't have a Flash version.
I know. All right, so I guess we're wrapping up this show. We have to get out of here. We started a little bit late. Of course, you can find the iPhone picks that we talk about every week, as well as the show notes. So if you want to read up on something that we talked about during the show, check out wehavecommunicators.com and click on the show episode number. And you can actually leave comments on the website too. We use Discus, so you know, log in with Discus however you like. Leave us a comment; we sure appreciate that, and it's fun to interact with you guys there. And you can send your feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. That's the email address. And Adam Christensen can be found at mattcast.com, of course, and twitter.com/mattcast is his Twitter page. And the member version of the Mattcast is member.mattcast.com.
Right. Thank you.
Of course. And Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com and twitter.com/jgamet. If you'd like to get one of his lovely drawings on a mug or some panties, cafepress.com/jgamet or zazzle.com/jgamet. And I'm sure everybody wants to know what the status of the mug drawing is.
I'm working on the drawings, And right now, I'm really not happy with what I've come up with. I mean, if it was just a simple little, hey, here it is, whatever sort of thing, I'd probably be fine. But, you know, this is something special. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, let the inspiration come to you.
Yeah. And, yeah, it just, I've everything's just been like too not right.
Yeah.
But it'll happen, and it'll probably happen after I've had several drinks. So I should probably start on that right away, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, but I like to have you guys check out twitter.com/LilReviews, L-I-L Reviews. That's where I talk about various things that I have an opinion of, and so like beer or food or movies or just, you know, anything. If that Kleenex that I got, that bargain Kleenex at Target, was actually a little bit too thin, don't like it, I would put that there if I didn't just say it now. So, you know, that kind of stuff. Stuff that might be useful. So twitter.com/LilReviews. And with that, that is it for us this week. We will see you next week on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck. Yuck, yuck,
no. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus, 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 stylus.
You have to get them and put them away and you lose them.
Yuck, 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 yuck.
No.
Yuck.
No.
Yuck, yuck,
no.
Yuck.
No. 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 You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus.